be just wonderful. You know, it's wonderful to be here again for another one of the study tours.
Yes. Well, I think that's clear, don't you?
Yes.
You know, every enrolled Baha'i throughout the world has accepted the station of the Bab and Baha'u'llah.
You are invited to a special study class on the significance of covenant breaking in relationship to the majesty and greatness of the covenant of Baha'u'llah. The class is being conducted by hand of the cause, Mr. William Sears. He is being assisted by Mr. Anthony Leese, a member of the Auxiliary Board for the Hands of the Faith in the Western Hemisphere. I'm Robert Quigley, your host for the evening. The study class is already in session, so let's join them. Mr. Sears is talking with a group of Baha'is from various communities in the Southern California area.
...by tremendous assaults. No wonder the Baha'is of the world are so confident, so assured. Faith is protected by an everlasting covenant. This is one of the great protective features of our faith, makes it unique in religious history. Because of the majesty and greatness of this covenant, attacks against it become a grave and unpardonable crime. For such attacks would not only endanger the spiritual future of the individual, but would strike at the very foundation of the future peace and security of all mankind.
Yes. With such a wonderful covenant, and it certainly is that, why do we have covenant breakers?
Well, there's always an element of perversity. Such attacks prove the strength of the covenant. They bind the believers closer together.
I'm extremely pleased that at last we're having an entire study class on this particular subject.
Sure, we all
are. Frankly, I'd like to know a lot more about the significance of covenant breaking, about what a covenant breaker is, how can we tell, and what we can and should do about it.
All right, yes. Good. Yes. Every Baha'i should know the answer to those questions.
I have written down 5 questions of my own.
Only 5? What did you draw, out of paper or out of ink?
5 to start with.
All right, what are they? I was only teasing. No more questions appear.
1. What exactly is a covenant breaker?
Mm-hmm.
2. How can we tell?
Good.
3. What should we do with their unwanted correspondence?
Mm-hmm.
4. How do we answer those people who say that since we believe in the independent investigation of truth, why shouldn't they find out what the covenant breakers think?
Yes, I've heard that one already.
Yeah. Yeah. 5. How do we answer those who say that if we believe in unity, shouldn't we find a way to bring the covenant breakers back rather than shun them and have nothing to do with them? And 6.
You said 5.
Yeah.
I just thought of another one.
Well, I hope you'll think of 10 more and we'll answer them all before the evening's over. As you know, I've been greatly blessed to have the help of Mr. Anthony Leese, a member of the Auxiliary Board for the Hands of the Faith in the Western Hemisphere. Tony's been good enough to look up a number of useful and exciting references on our subject for tonight. Because, you know, it isn't our own ideas that are important, but what the writings say about them. That's the important thing, the vital thing. Tony, suppose we begin with the beloved Guardian's words to America, written less than 2 months before his passing.
All right, Bill. September 21st, 1957. Your assembly cannot be too careful or vigilant in watching over the community, seeking out the sources of corruption and protecting the friends. He, the beloved guardian, feels that a course on the significance of covenant breaking should be included in the summer school curriculum so that the friends may understand the nature of this evil and how it has affected our faith for 100 years and other faiths in the past. The American Baha'is, aside from the older ones, do not seem to have any concept whatsoever of what a covenant breaker is.
That's so true. At least I, for one, am not at all satisfied with my own knowledge about covenant breakers and the significance of covenant breaking. Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, with so many new young Baha'is entering the faith all around the world, this lack of understanding about the true nature and significance of covenant breaking becomes serious, and we should remedy it.
How?
Well, the most effective way to protect the faith is to deepen the understanding of the friends so they're prepared to meet these tests or attacks before they arise. The thing we need and should have is a campaign of preparedness. Prevent the fires from starting, and not be a fire company that races in to put out the blaze after it started. And this is why your National Assembly wants you to deepen your understanding in this vital area of the faith, the covenant.
But isn't there a danger of accusing people of being covenant breakers who really are not?
Well, we don't have witch hunting in the Baha'i faith, as you know. And by the time we're through here tonight, I'm hopeful that at least this group will never have that problem again.
Well, I've heard of cases where people would say or imply that so-and-so was a covenant breaker, and it turned out to be quite wrong when the truth was known. But it caused a lot of damage and unhappiness.
Yes, and inexcusable.
Well,
how do we prevent it then?
Well, you see, it's not the responsibility nor the right of any individual Baha'i to say who is or who is not a covenant breaker.
Yeah.
This is a matter that is something that's the sole responsibility of the World Center. The announcement of who is a covenant breaker comes only from there. Until such a statement has been made, no one can be considered to be a covenant breaker.
Oh.
Now, if we believe that someone has unquestionably proved themselves to be disloyal to the faith, then we report it to the hands of the faith, the members of the auxiliary board, the National Assembly, but nothing more. Our responsibility as individuals does not include making prejudgments.
Yeah.
Well, I think this problem sometimes arises because there's still some confusion in the minds of the friends about the difference between losing one's voting rights and actually being expelled from the faith.
Yeah. Well, perhaps.
Very true.
So let's clear that up right away. Shoghi Effendi, I think, told us plainly what the loss of voting rights meant. And these are his words from Baha'i News 1940. Such action which national spiritual assemblies have been empowered to take against such recalcitrant members, however justified and no matter how severe, should under no circumstances be considered as implying the complete expulsion of the individual affected from the cause.
In other words, then, one is administrative and one is spiritual.
Yes, you could say that.
The punishment, I mean, although a punishment, I'm sure, is the wrong word.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is the wrong word. For unlike the religious history of the past, the Baha'i faith doesn't punish. It tries to heal and correct. But your thought is basically sound. As you'll see from the beloved guardian's additional comments in that same letter, I think this should make the distinction between loss of voting rights and covenant breaking unmistakably clear to everyone once and for all.
Shoghi Effendi goes on, the suspension of voting rights and other administrative rights of an individual, always conditional and therefore temporary, can never have such far-reaching implications since it constitutes merely an administrative sanction, whereas his expulsion or excommunication from the faith has far-reaching spiritual implications affecting the very soul of that believer.
Okay, is that clear?
Yes.
You see, the National Assemblies remove voting rights, and when the problem's corrected, they can restore them. But only the World Center can expel. That right of expulsion exercised by Abdu'l-Bahá, the beloved guardian, as the spiritual world head of the faith, still resides in the Holy Land and nowhere else. Such grave offenders of the faith are expelled by the hands of the cause of God, but with the approval of the Universal House of Justice, which acts in their capacity as the supreme world authority of the Baha'i community. And until such an announcement comes from the World Center, we don't know who is and who is not a covenant breaker. I believe Shoghi Effendi's had something more to say on that, didn't he, Tony?
Yes, Bill, he certainly did. These are his words. The former, loss of voting rights, is an administrative sanction, whereas the latter, expulsion, is essentially spiritual, involving not only the particular relationship of a believer to his local or national spiritual assembly, but his very spiritual existence in the cause. It follows, therefore, that a believer can continue calling himself a Baha'i even though he may cease to be a voting member of the community. But in case he is excluded from the body of the cause, he ceases to be a believer and cannot possibly identify himself even nominally with the faith.
Unquote. Does that clear up the difference between losing your voting rights and being expelled from the faith? You know, we're shepherds of the flock. We must do everything we can to protect the lamb from the wolf. And we mustn't let small dissatisfactions grow into more serious trouble. Shoghi Effendi had something to say in that, too.
Yes, Bill. Quote, the spiritual assembly should realize that its relationship to the believers is not merely that of a formal constitutional body, but also that of a spiritual institution called upon to manifest the attributes of courtesy, patience, and loving insight. Many conditions are not to be remedied by the exercise of power and authority, but rather by a sympathetic understanding of the sources of the difficulty in the hearts of the friends.
That's right.
Yeah. Wonderful.
You see, a minor trouble, if treated early, can be cured more easily, just as it can in medicine. But if you allow it to rankle, it may become virulent or even malignant. Our greatest protection, therefore, is always prevention beforehand, and love is always the sovereign remedy.
Yes.
Shoghi Effendi writes, as Abdu'l-Bahá has explained, some of the people are children and must be trained. Some are ignorant and must be educated. Some are sick and must be healed. Where, however, the problem is not of this order, but represents flagrant disobedience and disloyalty to the cause itself, in that case, the Assembly should consult with the National Assembly concerning the necessity for disciplinary action.
Perhaps we're dwelling far too long on this, but I'm finding it very helpful.
What else is troubling you?
If you lose your voting rights, how do you get them back?
Well, that's simple. You ask for them back. The arms of the faith are always wide open, you know, to welcome those who are sincere. All such a person has to do is to correct the mistake or the situation which led to the removal of his or her voting rights. then write to the National Spiritual Assembly, expressing a sincere regret for those past actions and asking to be reinstated as a member of the faith in good standing. If they are sincere, they will be welcomed back.
I like the term welcomed back and not allowed back.
Yes. Yes. Well, there's no stigma attached to reinstatement. The past is forgotten. There's no retribution, no suspicion, no spiritual probation for a sincere soul. Your faith is a faith of love, you know. How many of you, by the way, are members of local spiritual assembly? Well, then suppose I share with you these final words on the subject from the beloved guardian. Tony?
Shoghi Effendi says, the best criterion whereby you can measure the spiritual attainment of an assembly is the extent its members feel themselves responsible for the welfare of the group. Mm. And perchance they feel forced to deprive a person from his vote, it should be only to safeguard the rest and not merely to inflict punishment, end quote.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but it is the National Assembly that removes the voting rights and not the local assemblies, right?
Right. The beloved guardian advises every administrative body as follows. It is only when repeated warnings are unheeded. Note that word that the guardian uses there, repeated. It is only when repeated warnings are unheeded and deliberate disloyalty has become manifest that the extreme measure of expulsion should be taken. The test, he says, of our collective wisdom is the capacity to distinguish between deliberate disloyalty and the errors that proceed from lack of knowledge and immaturity.
Well, just one more question, and then I promise I'm finished on this subject.
No, please, the night is yours. I mean, the very most we can ever hope to do in one evening is stimulate interest. The real answers are in the writings. The friend should turn to them, study them, meditate on them. What is the question?
Well, you mentioned the grave sanctions that are imposed upon one who loses his voting rights. What are these sanctions?
Well, they've been shared with us in several places. Tony, what are the words, the exact words of the guardian's instruction?
They're these, Bill. Quote, regarding the matter of believers who have been deprived of their voting rights, he says, just as no one should ever be deprived of his voting right lightly, it should likewise be realized that to be deprived of it is a grave matter, involving heavy penalties spiritually. People who have been so deprived should not be permitted to attend any meetings involving the administration of the cause, such as an election or a 19-day feast. They can attend the 9 holy days, however. They should not be married by Baha'i law. No money should be accepted from them. They should not be given credentials which imply a member of the community in good standing.
Well, is that clear?
I think that's clear. Mm-hmm. But they're not covenant breakers, and we do not shun them.
No, they are not, and we do not.
I would like to get back to the significance of covenant breakers.
So would I.
Okay, fair enough. What's the first question?
Well, now, why is it so dangerous for believers not to understand the significance of covenant breakers? Well, aren't we protected by the fact that we are Baha'i?
Well, the problem is this. The warm, open-hearted, loving, hospitable nature of the Baha'is, particularly the new enthusiastic young believers, when coupled with inexperience, leaves them vulnerable and open to a very real danger, both to themselves and to the faith they love.
In what special way?
Well, suppose suddenly they find themselves confronted by a sly, ruthless, and deadly enemy whose sole purpose in being sweet and friendly and honey-tongued is to mislead them and dampen their enthusiasm.
What can they do? How can they tell whether such a person is sincere or not?
Well, if these people are known covenant breakers, we, of course, avoid them entirely. If we don't know, then we have to be alert. And when we detect anything that sounds like an attack, however subtly and lovingly phrased, then we know and we're alert. Dear friends, you know, when a spy enters a country, such as ours, for the purpose of causing confusion and disloyalty among the citizens, he doesn't come as an enemy saying, I hate your country. He comes posing as a friend. But if you're awake and alert, you soon detect his subtle manipulation of ideas. Now, this is exactly how the covenant breakers work. They are, in fact, spiritual spies who are committed to the destruction of the faith.
Could you give us a concrete example?
Yes, I'll give you one from my own experience. I was in Europe. A stranger approached me. It was so sincere that it was insincere, you know, smarmy and over-solicitous. My antenna went up right away. He praised the greatness of the cause and the beloved guardian. Then he smiled at me and he said, isn't it a pity, though, that the Universal House of Justice doesn't have the presence of the beloved guardian so that the Baha'is could be assured of their infallibility? I just looked at him. He said, what's your reaction? I said, can I see your credentials?
Well,
you see, now, supposing that happens to a new believer who may not yet understand the infallibility of the Universal House of Justice upon all things not recorded in the book was given to them by Baha'u'llah himself. This infallibility does not depend upon the presence of the beloved guardian among them. They each, House of Justice and Guardian, were given a special and distinct infallibility. But the covenant breakers like to try and twist things to cause doubts. Mm. If we know the covenant and the teachings, then they can't. Once a believer courageously challenges such attacks, the covenant breaker shows his true colors. He exposes himself as an enemy of the faith, so we shun him immediately, for his very breath is poison, spiritual poison.
But Bill, that seems like such strong language. I know it's true, but sometimes the new believers are confused by the very force of these statements about covenant breakers.
Well, beloved friends, fasten your seatbelt, because that's a very mild type of language compared to what you're going to hear before this night is over. Let's take our own country again. When a nation captures and convicts a spy, a traitor from among its own people, one who coldly and maliciously has tried to betray his own nation and people, what do they do about it?
Well, if he's guilty, they put him to death.
Right, shot at sunrise, as they say. Mm-hmm. He loses his life for his treason. Now, that is a form of political covenant breaking. No punishment is considered too severe. No nation will tolerate it. Imagine, then, when that treason and betrayal are directed against the messenger of God for all mankind. Not one nation, but all humanity. This covenant breaker attacks not the body, a temporary physical thing. He attacks the person's soul, an eternal and divine thing. He doesn't attack an assembly. He attacks the world order of Baha'u'llah, the divine framework which is the very pattern and hope for the future society of all men. These covenant breakers, you see, are enemies who try to undermine the faith and the administrative order of the promised one of all religions, the sole redeemer of mankind, the one who has resurrected those who were spiritually dead as promised by Christ. And they want to send them back to their spiritual tombs of death. They want to undermine the faith and the hope of innocent souls and destroy their belief. They want to poison and put out those lights which they can't stand. They're like bats of darkness who hate the light. They destroy your belief, corrupt your sweet hopes, and extinguish that everlasting creation of God, the human spirit, if they could. Now do you begin to see why the Baha'i community must be protected against them, and why the language is so strong? Why we try to rescue them themselves from that dread disease before they are lost forever. Our writings tell us that the faith of Baha'u'llah is the one message that can extricate humanity from the morass into which it is sinking, that it's the sole refuge for a tottering civilization, that it is the salvation of society, that the future peace, security, and happiness of all men depend upon it. Well, do we dare then to let anyone threaten this God-given structure?
Oh, no.
The pity is, dear friends, that we're just awakening to the vital importance of this grave responsibility.
Yes.
And there's no crime to compare with it, none. We have to act and not be wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, I'm referring particularly to that letter, April 1949. You know the letter we were talking about before?
Yes,
I think
yes.
You have it there.
Yes, the Guardian said, quote, "It is a pity that some of the Western friends, with remarkable naivete, do not grasp the fact that there is absolutely nothing keeping those who have broken the covenant out of the cause except their own inner spiritually sick condition."
You see,
that's
dear,
wonderful.
Don't feel sad for them. Feel sympathetic for the cause of God, which they're seeking to destroy.
The beloved Guardian continues, "Unfortunately, a man who is ill is not made well by just asserting that there is nothing wrong with him.
Mm-hmm.
Facts, actual states, are what count.
That's the thing.
Probably no group of people in the world have softer tongues or proclaim more loudly their innocence than those who in their heart of hearts and by their every act are enemies of the center of the covenant. The Master well knew this, and that is why he said we must shun their company but pray for them. If you put a leper in a room with healthy people, he cannot catch their health. On the contrary, they are very likely to catch his horrible ailment."
The entire thing is a quote from the Guardian.
Yes.
And how to treat covenant breakers is that simple. Once we understand this principle, we'll shut them out of our lives just as firmly and uncompromisingly as we would shut out someone with the bubonic plague or the cholera.
Sometimes I think that people outside the faith find it difficult to understand our views concerning covenant breakers.
Yes.
Well, even some of the friends themselves don't understand it really, especially the new ones.
True.
But I can certainly see why now. They just haven't been deepened in their understanding of the covenant itself.
Well, friends, I hope this session we're having tonight is helping to clear up some of the misunderstandings.
Well, yes,
I hope you'll share them with everyone else.
Yes. Well, I can see that we have to give up any idea that these covenant breakers are just poor, misguided souls, and that we really ought to try and help them.
Mm-hmm. And thus prevent ourselves, or if we try to help them, we help ourselves to a virulent case of spiritual infection. Mm-hmm. We have to prevent that. We have to learn never to make that fatal mistake. Pray for them, but shun them.
What's the best answer to give to outsiders, or even to some Baha'is who say, but shouldn't we have unity in the faith? Doesn't your faith teach unity? Then wouldn't it be better to bring back those